Hello and welcome to the Clan Blue podcast. I'm wearing headphones and I'm worried I look like an idiot. I'm not going to wear them for the whole episode. I've just got to listen to make sure we sound okay. I'm Dan Rowanson, joined by Matt Kendrick from Podimore Heath. Matt, how are you?
I can't even speak. I don't think I've even been into Podimore Heath since the sign.
Since
you've sorted out the backdrop, yeah. It looks very, very homely. So thank you for welcoming me into your home.
Yeah, for once, kind of. I said before we started, I couldn't live here, to be honest. There's so much space. And I've got Wi-Fi here, so I will work from here this week, I think. Yourself sorted the background. There's still work to be done. We're not the finished article yet, but we are getting there. It looks a little bit more homely now than it was when we first came in.
You know, you're getting married in a couple of weeks' time, and you're debating what to ask for. You ask for loads of kind of Laura Ashley and IKEA vouchers to furnish this, yeah?
Because that would be a waste of my money, wouldn't it, for me to do it? But yeah, we do need a bookshelf up there or something to fill this space up a little bit. But we're getting there. I was going to make a convoluted segue into like Villa getting there, but I did that yesterday, so I won't do that. Today's show is the audience Q&A episode that we do weekly. It's normally John. John's been here the last few weeks. You've not done one of these, and I've seen you a lot. You've done the preview on Friday, the post-match on Sunday, and now the Monday show. You're getting about a bit, aren't you?
I'm a bit nervous about this, because I presume people think John's going to appear. They ask
actual questions about football.
Intelligent questions that require intelligent answers.
Well, there's intelligent questions. Whether they require intelligent answers is another matter, I suppose.
I've been reading through some of John's stuff this morning just to
steal his thoughts. Should we get straight into it?
How come the headphones have come off now?
Because I'm pretty confident that we sound okay.
I'll kind of
dip in and out just to make sure. I feel like I look stupid with headphones. I think we could get away with wearing headphones if we were both doing it. I think, you know, like when you see, podcasters will wear headphones so they can hear themselves. Like obviously, I can't hear my own voice now through the mic. I think if we were both wearing headphones, that would be a bit more acceptable.
You think it'd look like we're on a kind of flight simulation or something, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I'd be keen to see what people
Daniel
think.
Daniel Robinson, we're travelling at an altitude of...
The weather is currently 7 degrees outside. Yeah, I think if we were both wearing them, you can get away with it. But I feel like I look stupid with headphones. Yeah. But maybe people in the comments will tell me I don't look stupid.
And your ears look naked now, though.
Do they? They're big as well, aren't they? Well, I might need to cover them up. I'll put them back on in a minute. Let's go straight in then with a question from Matt, not you, who says, I feel maybe less of a point after yesterday's result, but it seems so far that there's been little mention of Kamara being missing. I think that's a credit to Emery's tactics and coaching that such a loss seems to have been mostly absorbed. Is that fair, do you think?
I think so, yeah. I think we, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on how you look at it, I'll go back on again. The same departments aren't being hit at the same time, are they?
So yeah.
Had a midfield crisis and they made a central defensive crisis. We're still praying that we won't have a centre forward crisis, because I think that is when the meltdown really does get properly up and running. But I think Villa have absorbed that pretty well. So I think the fallout from the Kamara one was probably similar to what we got yesterday in terms of doom and gloom, we're done again. But the fact that Emery's found a way to, like I say, I think the questioner said to absorb the loss of Kamara probably gives me encouragement that he'll find a way to absorb the loss of John McGinn. Mm. But yeah, there's no doubt in that a player like Kamara, probably the unsung hero, wasn't he? And probably the doing the least glamorous role in midfield. You're going to miss him. But I have to be careful, because I turn everything into a Unai Emery loving, and that's quite difficult after we've been battered 4-0 at home to one of our rivals and question him tactically yesterday when we can't often do that. But I think even without McGinn, and we'll get onto that shortly, I'm sure, I think he'll find a way again.
Hmm. Should we go into McGinn now? There's a couple of questions about him. From Jay, first of all, who says, how do we replace John McGinn for the next three games, and why did he, brackets Emery, go to a back 5/3 against Spurs? We'll do the back three thing in a second. And James also says, with McGinn missing, it'd be simple to assume Tielemans or Tim will play alongside Luiz for the next three. Personally, I feel Powell could sit in front of Konsa and Longley. I fear Dougie and Yuri playing deep will deny creativity further up the field. So we're all assuming Timur Ibrahim is probably going to be the guy to come in and fill that hole that McGinn's missing. He's come on, didn't he? Yesterday he played against Luton, I think, off the top of my head. He came off the bench, maybe. Can't remember. Ajax. Powie in midfield, is that something you could see happening, do you think?
Well, it's a massive headache, so Tim Ibuprofen obviously is the...
Oh, God.
Sorry. I think there's a couple of choices. Now, I'm probably... I don't like the idea of Pau Torres in midfield. And I think he's more important to us defensively. Mm. And B, I'm probably being harsh on him, but I say mobility, you know, he's a fit, you know, athlete in his prime. But I'd actually look at it a slightly different way. Could we put Konsa in midfield? I just think Konsa probably got more energy. And this is probably strange after Konsa's given the ball away in that area and cost us. I think Tim should have first dibs on it.
Yeah, I think that's most likely.
Because, you know, I think Emery's, if he trusts somebody enough to be in and around his squad, they're not there to make up the numbers.
Yeah.
And although it's a big ask.
And we've seen that because we've had two goalkeepers on the bench and stuff. Yeah. So if you're on the bench at least, you're one of the crop that is good enough to be playing.
Yeah, you've done enough to win Unai Emery's respect and get you into that match day squad in the first place. So he knows that at any stage of that game, he's prepared to use you there. So I think you've got to try him and see how he gets on in there. It is a big ask because we're asking a young rookie with very little top flight experience. You know, I know he's done well out on loan in the Championship, but asking him to step up and do a really important job. But that's the simplest way without rejigging everything else and without moving lots of other players out of position. Listen, you could bring Tielemans and play him deeper because we've got more options. Although we've not got more options as centre forwards, we've got more options who can play in an attacking midfield capacity. I'm not convinced that Pau Torres in there is the answer. And judging, but at the look that you gave me, the look of pure contempt that you gave me when I suggested Ezri Konsa in there, then I've lost a little bit of bottle.
You lost your confidence in the broadcast early doors. I think if it's going to be one of them, Pau Torres is the obvious one. We say, don't we, about his stats look like that of a great midfielder, so I understand it. But that's his passing statistics. I worry about the rest of his game in midfield. It's not just about that. And then you're disrupting the defence as well. The easy solution is Tielemans further back or Timmy Rabunim straight in there. And I think it'll be one of those two, most likely. But McGinn has given us a massive headache, as much as we were talking yesterday about whether it's a red card, whether it isn't. The facts are he will miss those games, and that is a problem that Villa are going to have to deal with. It's difficult games as well coming up. West Ham and Wolves are not easy, and then it's Man City. So if it is Timo Rabunim, then it's no easy task for him. Just on the back three, back five thing, what did you make of that yesterday? We didn't speak about it on the post-match show. It felt to me a little bit like we were more concerned about stopping Spurs than playing our own game, and that's not really something we've seen from Emery. It's kind of like, well, we'll do our thing and let the opposition deal with us. That felt a little bit like, we're worried about Spurs, let's try and stop them and kind of settle a little bit. And I felt we sacrificed some of our own game for that.
Yeah, I don't know whether that almost felt like it played out like that for the first 15 or so minutes as well, where it felt like Spurs were...
Like we were kind of sounding them out a little bit.
A bit like they were doing more of the pushing and more of the probing. And, you know, it's normally the onus is on the home team, especially at Villa Park, and especially this Aston Villa, to go and stamp our mark and to lay a glove on them. So it's a difficult one because he doesn't get too many wrong, but we do when we get it wrong.
We get it badly wrong, don't we?
We've taken some pastings, haven't we? Well, yeah. I say taking some pastings. It was interesting. I've told you that I was reading some of John's stuff on the number nine bus. I'm not going to go on a bus tangent again. On the number nine bus on the way in, he was saying that was Emery's heaviest home defeat since he was managing. I think he was managing in Russia.
Really?
I think.
Wow.
So
was Villa's heaviest home defeat for a while as well? I think it was actually Spurs, the 4-0 in 2022.
Was that the one? But that felt like a 4-0, that one. But
yeah, well, that was it. We
kind of
didn't,
because
we started
in the first half and Lloris had the game of his life. And then they just, I think Son scored a hat-trick, didn't he? But yeah, I think we spoke about this at some length yesterday on the post-match stuff, but I think the frustrating thing was that at 2-0 and John McGinn sent off, it would have taken a wild comeback for us to get anything from that game. I think we should have, as far as you can with a numerical disadvantage, we should have controlled that game, and we shouldn't have lost that game 4-0.
Kept it to 2.
Yeah, really. I mean, it's easier said than done when Tottenham's tails are up and, you know, we're feeling sorry for ourselves. But I think that was the thing that was...
But do you... I mean, we didn't really... you know, have millions of chances anyway, but is it better to lose 4-0 trying to get back into the game rather than shut up shop at 2?
But did we try to get back
into the game? No, we didn't do it. Yeah, I know.
So I think there's a couple of things there. The way that we set up to start with probably did hand the initiative too much to Spurs and pay them too much respect. And having contrived to get ourselves into the mess that we're in, mm-hmm. I think kind of tactically and in terms of the game plan and game management, we could have done better to preserve that 2-goal defeat, if you like.
Yeah, there's a spin in a positive angle here from Phil, who says, I think Tim did really well in fairness, and if he does well in the next 3 matches, providing he's the one who plays, we could push McGinn back further forward when he comes back from suspension. So I'm hoping this could be a blessing in disguise. Is that a nice positive way of looking at it, that Tim Aribunham could, rather than just saying it's a 3-game period for him, he plays the rest of the season in central midfield and McGinn plays further forward again?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I think the way you look at it, that is, it's not as if we're throwing in 5 rookies at one time, and the players that he's going to have to guide him through, he's potentially going to have Pau Torres and Ezri Konsa sitting
next to him,
behind him. He's like, and in midfield now, sitting behind him, he's going to have Douglas Luiz and Youri Tielemans, 2 very now experienced Premier League good high-level operators around him. So, like I say, he's been thrown into the deep end in a sense, but not in a way that he's not going to have that support around him. And listen, you know, how old is he, Dan? Do we know? Is he early 20s now?
He's 20. He'll be 21 in June.
So he's 20 now. He'll be 21 in June. So at some stage...
Sometimes you've got to be thrown in.
Yeah, you've got to be ready for it, haven't you?
And so, this isn't, Old Trafford away with Jonathan Hogg and Barry Bannon and Eric Lehigh or whoever it was. You know, that team where we played a load of kids
in
2011 or whatever it was, or Moscow when we rotated the team so heavily. As you say, he's still in there with a load of good players around him, and that should help transition him into the team rather than going into the deep end. Yeah, that's fair.
I think the key thing to remember as well, and Emery was as vague post-match with his update as he was pre-match, Jacob Ramsey, we led to believe he's not a long-term serious thing.
Yeah.
So even if he doesn't make it for Thursday and Sunday,
back for Wolves,
he could be back for Wolves, back for Man City.
Yeah,
so, and that gives you another option in there. That probably would mean that perhaps Tielemans would sit a little bit deeper. But by then, if Tim is the one who gets the nod, he could have nailed that down anyway. Yeah. It could be a revelation.
Yeah, well, hopefully that is the case, and Villa still do enough to secure a top 4 place. Let's move on to something a little bit silly, early doors. We saved all the silly ones till the end last time, and I know some people like this, some people don't, but I don't really care what people like. I've got my running order, and I'm going to change it if I see fit. David says, if one of the Villa players was to switch sports and become a boxer, which one of the players would have the best chance up against Mike Tyson coming out of retirement, and how many rounds would they last? It's a very in-depth question for a bit of nonsense, which I appreciate from David. To lighten the mood a little bit, it's been quite heavy, hasn't it, the last 24 hours or so. So, of the Villa players, who's most likely to switch their boots for gloves?
Oh, I'm probably no less about boxing than a little about football, so that doesn't...
And that's very little then.
Doesn't start me off particularly well, but I think John McGinn, because I can just imagine him in a... like Scrappy Dappy Doo.
Oh, okay. Different angle.
I reckon he can kind of
clinching a lot. And
yeah, well, just because he's a bit shorter as well, just kind of, bobbing and weaving.
Yeah, I can see that.
So what about you?
Oh, well, I went the other way. One of the big lads. Mings or Carlos. Yeah, big physical presence. Heavyweight division, Tyrone Mings. Another kind of open-ended question from the Bristol Villa, and apart away from the Spurs tactical elements that we've been talking about. Who is the most underrated player in this squad? Because we obviously give a lot of praise to a lot of these players for being very good. Ollie Watkins, one of the best strikers in the country, and all that kind of stuff. So who goes underrated, do you think?
Tim?
Just not rated at all just yet, because we've not seen it.
I don't know, really, because we're having a brilliant season. We're giving everybody lots of love and respect.
I think a lot of the players that we and people watching as Villa fans will be praise heavy on will be underrated by Match of the Day pundits and Sky and all that kind of stuff. I still believe that to be the case. Whether people care about that or not is irrelevant. I think that a lot of our players do go under the radar still. So not Ezri Konsa, I don't think is appreciated for how good he is. For Villa fans specifically, the first name that I came to was maybe Luca Dean. I don't know if I say underrated, but somebody that we probably all thought would be leaving at some point as a hire, and I still could leave, obviously, in the next year or whatever, but has come in and done a job in a side that has probably felt like it's moved on from him with Moreno last January. Moreno then gets injured and we kind of go, oh, Luca Dean, don't go anywhere, we need you back. Yeah. And he's kind of come and done a job and done a very good job, actually, with minimal fuss and not kind of kicking up a fuss or anything. So Luca Dean may be underrated. I don't know.
That's a fair shout. I think, like you said, they can take the questions two ways. And the wider world, I think the whole team, the whole squad, individuals in it, the manager, I think people still see it some kind of fluke or something, rather than got there by brilliant design and brilliant evolution that's been driven by Unai Emery. But I think Luca Dean possibly is the one, because again was the talk of him going to like Saudi or something like that, and it was one of those ones where, okay, we've got this new exciting shiny new toy in Alex Moreno, so if Luca Dean goes, but actually, as he's proven, having competition in those two areas means that I think it certainly made Luca Dean raise his level again, I think, and probably find the consistency that he didn't have before. So I think that's a fair shout, but I think generally, as a fan base on the whole, we realise that we're witnessing something special, and we give credit and love where it's due.
Yeah. Matt says, I don't think we'll know the answer to this, by the way, but let's just open it up, and maybe other people, when I say other people, maybe John can look into this. He says, has there ever been any adjusted results study on sides who have played on the Thursday at the weekend and then play a side who didn't play midweek? So obviously Villa played midweek against Ajax, Spurs didn't play. Is there any impact on those results or any trends that suggest that the team that didn't play in Europe tends to win more often than not? Obviously, if it was Liverpool versus Sheffield United, it would probably be irrelevant because they'd batter them anyway, is what Matt is alluding to. Now, again, you're not going to know this because I've only just sprung it on you upon you now. I've seen the question about half an hour ago and haven't had a chance to do the research.
Professor Jacobs released the study.
Exactly, yeah. But you would assume, without looking into it, there is something in that we played midweek and Spurs didn't. So you could either say that, well, Villa are more sharp than Spurs because they've had an extra game, or they're more tired. Depends which way you want to look at it.
Well, reading John's post-match analysis on the way in, only that Villa, he reckoned that was Villa's first post-European...
Yeah, that's true.
Defeat.
Yeah.
So it's a very small sample size because they've been in Europe for yonks. But again, it comes back down to the squad again, doesn't it? And that's the difference between Villa and the established elite, that they do have a substitutes bench and probably more where players can be interchangeable, where we're not quite at that level. We're still carrying, you know, injuries in certain places. So what I love about all I read about Unai Emery is that, and it's what comes across when his players give interviews, and it's what comes across when he gives interviews, it's no excuse culture.
We said a lot about that, about Gerrard, because he made a big thing, didn't he, about no excuses, but then proceeded to rule out a load of excuses.
But I think with Emery, you believe this no excuse culture, so that's the trade-off, isn't it? You're playing Europe, you're going to have more football matches. Yeah, it's going to take its toll on your squad. Your squad have either got to be durable enough to and fit enough and have enough stamina to roll with that, or not. But I don't want to use that as an excuse.
No, I don't think it is an excuse. But when I looked at the team sheets yesterday, I was quite encouraged by our bench with the options that we had. We got Diaby on there, Zaniolo, Diego Carlos, Timo Ibrahimovic, Duran was back there. Kessler, I think, Moreno as well. Looking at Spurs bench as well, and I can't remember that off the top of my head, but I thought if this game isn't going the way we want it to, we've got options there to make changes, and we have got a decent amount of depth. I think the problem is they're not doing it when they're on the pitch. There's a question here from Tom who says, can you please talk about Diaby and Zaniolo? At this point, I'd rather Rodgers came on. Diaby is shot of all confidence and looks a poor player at the moment. Now, I wouldn't go as far to say he looks a poor player, but he's certainly not. He's in a rut, isn't he? He's not looked at really for a while.
Was key with him when he came on yesterday.
But then he got that assist against Luton, and you think, is this going to kind of spark him into life? And it hasn't.
Yeah, I suppose it's some. I mean, Bailey earlier in the season used to thrive as coming on as a substitute, and that's almost that incentive to prove people wrong or to make that impact is what drives you. From Diaby, obviously he did get that assist that ended up winning the game, but yesterday he looked, even his touch, he couldn't get the ball out of his feet,
and he wasn't the only one either.
No, he wasn't. And but he may look like a poor player, or he's definitely not a poor player.
Yeah.
So you're right, it's all very well having what looks like a strong bench on paper, but if that cast of understudies can't come in and deliver, well, yesterday they didn't just need to maintain the level, they needed to come on and improve the level of what was already on the pitch. So we're going to need everybody to really step up now. There's a lot made of us getting a battering yesterday. I think people are going to expect us, the wider world is going to expect us, that's where Aston Villa crumble, and Unai Emery's not going to allow that to happen. For that not to happen, it needs 15 players to be at that level.
I saw some stuff yesterday on social media from Arsenal fans who were like basically celebrating Spurs beating us, which I think firstly is bizarre, but like this classic Emery, this was the point where we started to fall, a classic second season Emery. It's like we are fourth still, like this isn't that we're mid table and we've really felt, this is his second season and he's doing perfectly well. It's just that people will look at that and go, oh, battered at home, like this is the start of the end. And it, obviously we don't know at this stage, it very well could be the start of the end, but I don't believe it is. I think it was one bad day all round, and I expect us to bounce back against Ajax. I'd love to say I expect us to go to West Ham and win and beat Wolves, and we should on paper and all that kind of stuff, but we know it's not that simple. But I still think we'll put enough results together between now and the end of the season to finish ultimately where we deserve to finish, which should be in the Champions League places.
The Dani Olo one's interesting for me as well, because I just can't quite, it's not happening.
No, no.
For him, is it? And I don't think it's a lack of willingness. I think he's determined to try and.
I think he's determined to try and make
an impact, but I can't quite work out what an impact is supposed to be.
Getting a yellow card. That's a shoo-in, isn't it, for Daniel when he comes in? He'll get booked. I'll tell you that if he doesn't.
Which shows, you know, he's fired up for it. But I don't know. Like I said, I don't know what
if Zaniolo coming on is the answer. What is the question? Let's talk about Ajax a little bit from Steve, who says, and this is something I'd not even thought about till just, if it goes to penalties versus Ajax, which is obviously a possibility that there'll be a penalty shootout in knockout European football, who are the five penalty takers? He's given a list of five here, but do you need help or can you reel off some names?
I did see his question on Twitter, but so obviously be Louise, wouldn't it?
This is obviously providing they're still on the pitch at that point, of course.
Yeah. McGinn?
Yeah. He's not in Steve's five, but yes, he would be in mine.
Torres?
Yeah, he scored a penalty in the Europa League final, semi-final.
I know Watkins has missed a few, but you'd stick Watkins down. How many is that, four?
That's four. Bailey? Should Bailey take a pen?
I'd want somebody to absolutely smash the fifth one in. He'd probably try and Penancrit, wouldn't he, Bailey?
Yeah,
probably come off as well. But
the five that Steve has got is Louise, Bailey, Watkins, Torres, Moreno. I don't know whether that's his order. I assume it is. Dean would take a decent penalty, I would have thought. He takes free kicks.
Yeah,
so
stick him in.
I'd have Dean probably over Moreno, but again, it depends which one was obviously playing. Yeah, I don't think there's too many more options after that, to be honest. All right, let's go with something else slightly different. Lee says, if you could pick up another player from our past and put them into the current team to help us smash the running, who do you pick? And I'm talking as a person here in the dressing room, that kind of thing, not the player on the pitch. So I'm trying to think, with these kind of questions, I always think, what do we need? What are we missing? Probably a midfielder at the moment. Gareth Barry, maybe? Gareth Barry next to Douglas Luiz. Gareth Barry could take a penalty as well against Ajax. Combine two questions in one. Like a Barry Milner type, maybe bit of energy in the middle. That's what I'll go for.
I think I'll probably go for, and this touched upon, what game is this for? Just generally,
if you could, like, for the rest of the season, you could bring somebody back.
Because I was thinking with McGinn being missing, who could we bring in? That real kind of leader.
Yeah.
Barry
is a decent shout, I think.
Lead some example.
Depends what era you want to go back to, I suppose.
Come back to me.
Oh, just leave it, it's fine. If you can't think of something, we'll just move on. Ant says, if we have to rely on fifth place for the Champions League qualification and providing England gets the spot, is there any qualification or playoff game to get into the competition proper, or do we instantly get into the new format? Now, I assume you don't know the answer to this.
You've done your homework on this, haven't you?
I'm going to, yeah. That's what I was about to say. So on the podcast feed, we are doing some shows that are audio only. So obviously we're on YouTube, we're on audio platforms. We're starting to do more things that are audio only because it allows you to kind of read a script, essentially, with that, for want of a better word. I know their voice noticing is unscripted, but some of the stuff John's done, he's had to redo a lot of takes, but you don't really notice that editing in audio platforms. So I'm going to do an audio only chat at some point about the new Champions League structure, which may feel a little bit premature after we've just been beaten 4-0 by Spurs. So it might not be this week, but I actually quite like the new format, the kind of league system. I know that some people are against it, but that's what it is. So I'd rather be in it than not be in it. So I'm going to do like a 5-10 minute explainer about what the format is and how it works and how you get into it. And we get asked every week, why is fifth place going to be Champions League? What needs to happen for that to happen? So I'm going to do a show specifically about that. I have done a bit of homework, but not enough just to be able to reel off the answers now. So that'll be something that comes on the podcast feed in the next, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks, let's say. There's a question here that I've not written the name down for. So do you want to give me a name for this one? My apologies to whoever it actually was.
What about Edwin?
Edwin says, would you see finishing sixth as a failure from this point? That's quite a depressing question from Edwin, isn't it?
Oh, Edwin.
Bloody Edwin.
I would actually, yeah.
Would you?
I would say finishing sixth. From this point, if you'd asked me back in August when you were predicting Champions League and the whole room laughed at you during our live event at the Hockey Social, I wouldn't. But we've occupied that position now for what, the last 3 months?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would. And that's not saying that we should all be doom and gloom and you know, that there should be a moat around that Villa Park that's made purely from our salty tears. But I just think we've got ourselves in this position now.
It's ours to lose, for sure.
So would you not see it as a failure?
I don't know whether I'd use the word failure.
You just used it. Blame Edwin, not me.
Yeah, I'm saying my opinion is I don't think I'd use the word failure, because from a bigger picture perspective, last year we were in the Conference League and next year we'd be in the Europa League, so that is a step upwards. It would be a massive disappointment and I'd be angry with finishing sixth, because that would probably mean that Man United have finished above us, and how have they got over that gap? And I'd be, you know, really, really frustrated by that. And I'd be fuming, actually. I wouldn't just be frustrated. I can tell you now, I'd be proper angry if we didn't finish in the top five. Man United as well, getting in above. Imagine that. They don't deserve it, do they? That would hurt me even more. I'm getting annoyed about it now. It's not even happened.
So I don't know how you can square that annoyance with you not describing it as that.
Failure, I don't think failure is an accurate term. To do better than last season can't be a failure. Can it?
But it's not.
We've been up there all season, but we haven't achieved anything with that. We don't achieve anything until the end of the season.
Yeah, we're probably splitting hairs now.
A bit like legend, isn't it? What do you define legend as?
With semantics here, because from the position that we're in to finish two places lower than we are now, we've failed to make the most and capitalise upon that opportunity.
Yeah.
Now, so maybe that's a failure of the final 3 months of the season rather than a failure as of the whole season, but he's stitched us up here, Edwin. He's trying to divide us down, and we're tight, you know.
That's fine. A little disagreement is all right sometimes. We'll move on though. Holly says, seeing as you just mentioned Hockley, Holly says, will there be a live event this summer? Now, we haven't discussed this with a venue, whether it's Hockley or otherwise. We've not had any meetings about doing it.
Doing it here.
That's plenty of space, yeah.
A few cans.
I'll say yes. There should be another live event at the end of the season. I would love that to be a celebration of finishing sixth or winning the Conference League, things like that. There should be something for us to be happy about and be buzzing for at the end of the season. So probably the first week of June, I suppose. That's what it was last year. We'd absolutely love to do another one, but as of right now,
anniversary, so it might have to be the second.
Okay, all right.
Second week.
It was the 1st of June last year. When did your wedding anniversary?
Yeah, is it June or July? I think my anniversary is on the 3rd of June.
Okay, all right. I'm sure it was the 1st last year.
So yeah, we don't have a week long celebration then. Yeah. Married 19 years, so
surprised you even do anything.
We'll just
at all,
make
to be
her
honest.
A cup of tea. Or
yeah. So yes, there will be a live show, but nothing confirmed or anything yet. And I mean, we will need to get it's March now, so yeah. We wanted to get working on that. But yes, there will be a live show in the summer. Let's do a couple of football ones before we finish with some silliness. Sweet Sonic says, a change of perspective. With all our injuries this season, where would we be under a different manager that's not as outstanding as Unai Emery is?
So any other manager in world football?
Yeah, we wouldn't be in the top four, would we?
Depends who that any other manager was.
Well, to an extent, yeah.
I suppose.
If it's a lesser manager would not have us where we are now, because they would have used the injuries as excuses and reasons to sit back and drop 20 yards back and be more defensive, and that would open and invite pressure. I think we'd be 8th or 9th.
Yes, but I suppose...
Look at Newcastle.
Yeah, I suppose the question is, what would be par for the squad or the availability of the squad?
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose this leads back to the previous, not the Hollis question about the live event, the previous question, pesky Edwin again, about failure, because there's no doubt about it that I think we have punched above our weight.
Yeah, to
a lot, lot of this season. So what would par look like? Par would probably, that's par, not pow. Par would probably look like, what you say,
I think eighth. It finished 7th last year, so, with a couple of additions. This squad should probably be around 6th. I would say.
So, yeah. So, you're probably saying, with the hand that have been dealt in terms of injuries, you probably are saying 10th, 9th or 10th.
Yeah, I think you'd be in that bracket with Newcastle and Brighton, that kind of rung below Europe this season, if it wasn't for Unai Emery. Because I think the problems and the challenges he has faced with the squad have been massive.
Yeah.
And if we do get into the Champions League, given all of that extra context, how he's not going to be manager of the season, I don't know. It'll be a miracle.
Yeah, I mean, let him get the final part of this job done then, and then we can anoint him with various awards. But it just, and I've said this before on the podcast, everything points to what that man has done, and good managers and good leaders don't just cope when everything's going well. They're able to find answers and find solutions, and I think that's testament to Emery that he has been able to just pretty much get on with it, and regardless of what hand he's been dealt, has found a way. Okay, we've had aberrations like Spurs yesterday and like Newcastle and the other
aberrations. Yeah. What does that mean?
Things that are different from that have made us veer away negatively.
A departure from what is normal, usual, or expected. Typically, an unwelcome one.
So did I use it in the correct context?
Yeah, good. Yeah. You've taught me something there, thank you.
But he's had those, whatever you said, and he's dealt with them positively.
Yeah. I imagine in private conversations at Bodymore, if he's going, F this referee and this decision and this injury, I'm sure he's fuming with certain things, but he doesn't ever portray that to the media or press conferences.
Do you think he portray that to his players, though?
No, I mean, like, to Monchi and
that's Damian. What I mean. I think the external things, I think he's probably like some... I don't know, some mad Tasmanian devil who's like furious in his office with his kind of inner circle of trusted coaches and advisors.
There must be some of that.
But I'm not sure he'd convey that. I think if he's unhappy with his players or with an individual, he'd convey that to them.
Yeah.
But if he's unhappy with external factors, I think he'd...
Yeah, I agree, yeah. Yeah, we don't know. We're only speculating, but I can't imagine in the person to kind of running through the canteen... You know, swearing about a referee or whatever, but in his group of two or three people that you trust, there's got to be some frustrations with some of the things that have happened this season.
I've finally thought which player I'd bring in.
Okay, come on.
And I don't know why, but my head's going to like Steve Stormont, because this is not a contrived plug for the Ron, big Ron chat, but you can watch it. Blah blah blah. Just, I think having somebody like Steve Stormont, and again, this is on the pitch yesterday, and this is not supposed to be a slight on Luca Dean and on. Alex Moreno would play in that position. Just, I think Ron might have described him as like a really big moaner. Just having somebody who's like, this is not, you know, when standards slip.
Yeah.
And they're all professionals. They're all really, really top footballers. But somebody would be like, I'm not having this.
Yeah, there was interesting you mentioned that, actually. There was a clip, and I'm massively blowing this out of proportion, really, so apologies for it. Did you see the clip of Zaniolo and Dean kind of like throwing their hands up in the air?
No.
There was a moment, I don't know whether we were obviously at least 2-0 down by then, could have been 3, could have been 4, I don't know the context of it, but Spurs get past either / one of them and go on to run down the wing, and both at the same time they kind of go, rather than like make up the ground and try and track back. Like, they're both more bothered about, oh, you know, that was your fault. Or, you know. So interesting you mentioned that a left back to replace Luka Dean in that element, to rather than kind of point fingers, just crack on and deal with the problem.
Just like, this isn't good enough.
Yeah. Like I said, they could have been 4-0 down at that point. It doesn't matter, but
So it took me a while to get there, but just somebody. I mean, Petrov was another one like that who got really high standards. And I'm not saying this group haven't got high standards. Of course they have. They've got impeccable standards. But just someone who can say, right, okay, we've got to sort this out.
Do you think that's almost an external thing to the fan base as well? Like, you need to. They might. Ezri Konsa might be berating somebody on the pitch, but you don't really see it.
Don't do that for pantomime. Don't do that for the show. I mean, I think Emery is really interesting in that, because he's clearly a deep thinker and tries to, you know, he doesn't take the acclaim, certainly not yesterday, doesn't take the acclaim of the fans. He just wanders down the tunnel. But yet, in that moment, on the touchline, you know, he wears every emotion on the sleeve, and I don't think you can force that.
No.
That either comes naturally, it doesn't. Yeah. And I'm not for one minute suggesting that any of these players don't care. It was just in the context of that question.
Yeah.
Somebody who would say, well, right, I'm going to go and grab this game, really.
Yeah, okay. Question from Hina, who says, how do people feel about cheering on other teams to benefit us in Europe and in the Premier League? I despise Chelsea, but we will have to want them to beat Spurs, and I'm already dreading this. This is, I kind of mentioned this earlier about Arsenal fans almost being glad that Spurs won to kind of get one over on Emery or whatever, which is absolute nonsense. But yeah, we're kind of going, well, we could do with Man United losing and all that kind of stuff and cheering on another team. We need Man City to win the Champions League to help the European coefficients and stuff.
It's not cheering on, is it? You're not going to have like a rosette and a football rattle.
I'm quite happy when Man United lose.
I don't really care about who wins or who loses in terms of for their own glory or whatever. And I try not to like inhabit the kind of social media world like that, because it would just. Everybody, including Villa, everybody's got fan bases with real kind of knobheads in who are going to wind you up. And try not to let that influence me. So I couldn't tell you who do I dislike more, Chelsea or Spurs? Neither, because they're just a bit. They just have to be. They're like the extras in the play. Like Aston Villa's the leading man.
They've got to be there for somebody for Villa to play.
So I don't. You know, are they the villains? Are they the heroes? I don't really care. So when Chelsea play Tottenham, if a Chelsea win suits our agenda more. Of course, I want Chelsea to win. I mean, it might be, you know, if you get into kind of local rival territory, which is several years removed now, that might be different. But even then, I want things that are going to advance the cause of my football club.
Yeah. Let's say that was the scenario. Last day of the season. Here's a scenario for you. Birmingham are in the Premier League. Imagine that, right? And they're at the bottom. And a win on the final day keeps them up in the Premier League. And whoever they're playing, them losing is good for Villa as well. So say if whoever they so say they beat Spurs.
So if Birmingham beat one of Villa's rivals at the top end of the wins Villa the league.
Gets us into the Champions League, but they also stay in the Premier League for another year. Would you be happy with them winning?
Yeah. Because it's through the claret and blue kind of prism of That's the thing that's going to decide my mood, my outlook, not on the whole of my life, but for a chunk of my life.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And
let's not worry about it, because they're not going to be in the Premier League
That means we've got another 6 points the following year.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So. Yeah. There's more chance of them being in League One next season than anything else, so we won't have to worry about that for a while. Two questions to end the show, then, just a little bits away from off-the-pitch matters. Wayne says, what's happened to Hercules? Haven't seen him on pitch side for a few seasons. I'd noticed it for that long. But
Has it been
that long?
I wonder whether it has been that long. I mean, obviously we spoke about Bella yesterday and whether a massive head was going to save a charity penalty. Just imagine Bella just giving it loads, can't you?
Oh, no, yeah.
They come with a cat.
Oh, excellent.
What's happened to Hercules? When we've told the story of Hercules before, haven't we, about when he, well...
Have we?
older Villa fans will know the story of the older Hercules got himself into a bit of trouble with Miss Aston Villa.
I haven't
noticed Hercules' absence.
I can't say I have, to be honest. But I've also not noticed that he's been there either.
Yeah. I wonder, you know how they're designing, you know how they keep redesigning the badge and pointing him in different directions and sharpening his claws and making him growl and stuff like that. I wonder if he's having to go through like plastic surgery every week to keep up with all the crest changes.
Yeah,
it's
maybe.
Like, oh God, you know, he's facing that way. And like, oh God, I've now got to face that way. And you know, have they sharpened his features on various things and stuff like that?
Yeah, more talons and more.
I reckon he's in Birmingham's whatever Birmingham's kind of
Birmingham's Lion
best,
Hospital.
Best kind of lion cosmetic surgery clinic is. I reckon he's in there wrapped up in bandages at the moment, not knowing which way to turn.
Yeah, possibly.
But literally.
Yeah. All right, one final question. This is probably one for you because I can't think of anything off the top of my head. Ben says, have you ever had an odd meeting with a footballer? Have you ever bumped into somebody and thought, oh, that was a bit weird? Or
an odd meeting?
Anything spring to mind?
With a footballer?
I can't say I've met many footballers in my lifetime. I've done like bits of work and stuff where I've come across footballers, but I'd never describe it as weird.
I don't know, it was odd. I had a massive row with Tommy Elphick once because I wrote a nice piece about why Nathan Baker deserved his place in the team.
Really? What happened there?
And Tommy Elphick didn't like it.
All right, let's dig into this a little bit. How does a row with Tommy Elphick, where does he phone you? Is it an email?
I was covering a game and I think I was summoned downstairs. I don't know what the layout of I've not been in the press box for years now, but and he was waiting at the bottom of the stairs and somebody from Villa's staff would have said, oh, Tommy Elphick wants to see you, he's not happy about this. And I probably would have done a little bit of a what have I done kind of, you know, not
me?
For the first
me?
Time.
What, like what a, like a player who's not who just doesn't think they've made a foul.
My byline was hacked. and he was really, really annoyed, but he was the most eloquent footballer. So he was angry, and I don't think he had that valid a point because the piece was mainly that Nathan Baker, I think Baker and Chester, did they form a partnership at some stage? You know, there's the Nathan Baker kind of, what was the Nathan Baker chant?
Head of
brick away or something like that.
He's a mortgage advisor now, didn't he?
He is. So, you know, he can't have headed that many bricks, otherwise you wouldn't be taking mortgage advice.
Also, just to interrupt, they advertised the Legends tour yesterday at Villa Park. Nathan Baker is the guy doing the tours. I was like, legend?
Well, I want to try and get Nathan Baker on the podcast, so
big legend.
I'm fully on board with that. But
I should have got him to do my mortgage, shouldn't I?
Well, the thing is, if he's a mortgage advisor and he's heading bricks, that doesn't bode well for the
what he's doing
for the long term value of your house.
House
it?
Inspections, bashing through the walls.
Yeah. But anyway, I was bigging up Nathan Baker, as I'm going to continue to do because I want to try and get him on the podcast. I was bigging up Nathan Baker in this piece, and I put that he deserved his place in the team ahead of Tommy Elphick. And fair to Tommy Elphick, despite my experience, I've heard really good things. Really, really. Lovely fella, really proud and competitive guy as well, and probably frustrated that Nathan Baker had taken his place without me, you know, saying it was the right decision. But yeah, so he just had this really eloquent. Well, one side of the row was eloquent from him, and I was just standing my ground and agreed to disagree. So that was a weird interaction, but it wasn't, you know, footballer. Yeah.
Wasn't like you bumped into him in the supermarket.
No,
he's buying something weird or anything like that.
Have I bumped into anybody in a supermarket? I think Nigel. I think
if I've just used that as like a throwaway like scenario, and you've actually bumped into someone in a supermarket, that
no, I don't think I have. I think the Nigel Spink once when it would have been the he can't have been playing, so it must have. Well, I don't think he played in either, did he? Either the 1994 Cup Final at Wembley or the 1996 Cup Final at Wembley. I had a wee next to Nigel Spink, who must have gone there amongst the punters, basically. So that was, you know,
weird.
You don't really ask for an autograph then, do you?
Here's one. This isn't weird at all, but
just sign this. You know,
it's just come to me. Mile Jedinak is obviously with the Spurs coaching staff, isn't he now? With Ange, fellow Australian, and I'm in Lower Trinity near the dugout, and the walkway or steps or whatever. On my row leads up to like where all the analysts and stuff sit. Yeah. My dad went for a wee yesterday. I don't know if he's watching this or not. Might not have got this far. Went for a wee at half time and came back. And as he was coming into our row, Milo Jedinak walked up the stairs, and like, we've seen him walk down the touchline anyway. I was like, oh, Milo Jedinak.
Did he give you the death stare?
No, he had his earpiece in and a laptop, and he was walking up the stairs. And I saw him and seen my dad coming down. I thought, well, they're about to cross paths in a minute. And I like, looked down the end of my row, my dad like, clocked it was him, then looked at me, and I seen my dad like, look around someone's shoulder, and he was like, that was Milo Jedinak. That was not an odd.
Still got, shaving or?
No, still got a bit of a beard, but not as weighty as it once was. So not an odd interaction, but we see that quite often where we are, that you'll like, see someone on a coach and stuff walking up and down our row. So
you saw an opposition coach at Villa Park on match day, is what you're saying?
Yeah. what an odd experience. Yeah, I
actually saw Sasa Cercic in Rackhams.
What's Rackhams?
Have you even ever heard of Birmingham City Centre?
I don't live round here.
You know House of Fraser?
Yeah.
That's Rackhams. You know House of Fraser's shop?
Yeah. But well, it's called something different.
Yeah, I think it's fallen. I don't even know. Is it like a discount?
I've got no idea.
Thing now. Rackhams? I mean, it's going to be the 90s, pre-phone, so we scribbled on a bus.
So before I was born then?
Yeah, but I reckon Rackhams has been there.
If you ask me, like, what's Woolworths? I'll be like, oh, I've heard of that. This is something that probably has been defunct years ago. And
we'll leave in the comments.
Let us know in the comments if you've heard of Rackhams.
And when did Rackhams cease to be Rackhams? But it's always Rackhams because it's a landmark in Birmingham. Anyway, you'd assign a bus ticket. Do you know Alice the Goon?
You never seen I might as well not be here. I've
not seen Alice the Goon from Popeye.
No, I've heard of Popeye.
I think it's Alice the Goon. She always reminds me a little bit of Sasa Cercic, but it wasn't her. It was.
All right.
It was Sasa Cercic.
I'll put in a stop to this podcast now before you offer me another reference that I'm not aware of. Cast the other day, Rackhams.
Adam asked if what my favourite Cast song was.
Oh, did he?
So I think it probably. Yeah, it probably is Walk Away. Something like that, but still not going to sing it.
Okay. Well, I'm going to walk away from this podcast now. Thank you, Matt, for your time as always. Yeah. Thanks for watching. Scroll down in the comments. Let us know your thoughts. We'll be back later in the week for an Ajax post-match show. It's going to be you and me again, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Oh, what a triumph
for return
to the podcast this is for you. You're on every single episode now. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, then you can give us a 5-star review. If you thought it was worth a 5-star review, then please do get involved with that. And we'll see you later in the week. Thank you for watching. We'll see you soon.
Up the Villa.